Welcome to Fully Vetted, animal care news from the clinic to the farm, presented by the Ohio Veterinary Medical Association. And here is your host, Mia Cunningham, and producer, Kristen Bennett. Welcome back to Fully Vetted. I'm Kristen Bennett. Thank you for joining us for another episode. As you know by now, Fully Vetted gives members of the veterinary community a deeper look at the issues impacting the profession from a variety of different perspectives. Since its debut in January 2020, the podcast has delved into hot topics like diversity, animal abuse, and well-being, and introduced listeners to their colleagues from across the state and beyond. Now, we want to hear from you. Listen to any four episodes and share your feedback for a chance to win free registration to the 2022 Midwest Veterinary Conference. Submit your entry online at www.fullyvettedpodcast.com/contest by September 1st to qualify. And now, on to the interview.
Welcome to the Fully Vetted Podcast. I'm your host, Mia Cunningham, and I am joined today by Anna Cote and Daniela Guzman, both students at The Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine. Anna and Daniela are leaders at the college and here to talk to us about their involvement with OSU College of Veterinary Medicine chapter of VOICE, Veterinarians as One Inclusive Community for Empowerment. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
So just to start off, if you would please just share with our listeners a little bit about your background, where you're from, what year you are, and why a career in veterinary medicine. And Anna, let's start with you.
Yes, I'm a first year. I went to The Ohio State University for my undergraduate, and I'm from Chester Springs, Pennsylvania. I've always wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a child. And then as I grew up, I got more experience and I got really involved in the science and helping people and helping animals.
Awesome. Daniela?
So I'm a third year, obviously at The Ohio State, and I did my undergrad at Stony Brook, and I did a master's in economics at Colorado State. And I'm originally from New York, so you will not hear a New York accent, but I promise you that's where I'm from. And I started out interested in vet medicine like everyone else, loving animals, but I guess I got more involved in the profession. I started seeing kind of the different areas that could really use, you know, advocacy and voice. And so I'm really interested in policy as well as zoo medicine and interested in debt because I'm a nerd. And yeah, so that's kind of what really pushed me to continue in vet medicine. But of course, I just love animals and I would do that forever if I could.
Overachiever. So for those who may not be familiar with VOICE, can you guys give us just like kind of a bird's eye view of what the organization is and kind of what it stands for?
Basically, like when I have to give it like a really quick elevator spiel for it, VOICE is kind of like the diversity club on campus. It's mostly a student organization and it is completely student led as well. We're really lucky to now have a lot of affinity groups that we support. And so before, when I started with VOICE, it was mostly kind of doing everything that all the affinity groups do and just trying to support the students that basically just fall into other. And whether that be in the LGBTQ plus community or identifying as a student of color, and VOICE's goal was to just be supportive of that. And so it is a chapter of a national organization. And so we do get support as well from National VOICE. And now we have been trying to support mostly financially the affinity groups because new organizations don't really receive that kind of funding until they like reach a certain status. And that can be obviously a challenge because you can't reach that status without money. So we really try to just financially support whatever it is that they wanted to promote and kind of provide what we could with regards to network and other speakers that might be of value to their club and really get their name out. And we would traditionally host different events surrounding things like Dia de los Muertos or working with children in those communities of color. I'm hoping Anna will kind of take a more impactful approach. Sometimes I feel that things can be a bit performative. And so we're really just trying to do things that will benefit the students and maybe in a less traditional way. And so we've really been pushing student parents as a group that isn't really being maybe helped the way they should be. And so we're trying to do things like having like a parent-child event and just to provide parents with that kind of, you know, like we see you and we're trying and we might not be able to provide you with exactly what you need because this is new, but we're going to do the best we can. And so we're really just trying to provide a space for students that check the other box. And it really changes with time as there are different needs for things. So we've had open discussions about different things that have happened, whether in our local community or on the broad scale with regards to LGBTQ plus race and other similar areas.
What specific outreach do you guys do with community?
We, before COVID, had a relationship with a Girl Scouts group, and they basically come and get to just kind of hear from us about what it's like and what we've been through and playing with models in the lab and just kind of exposing them to science, especially, you know, young girls. That can be a challenge in this society, and really just trying to give them the opportunity to see the cool and also gross fun things that we get to do. I hope that we'll expand that. I guess with like any diversity clubs, it can be a challenge with like getting off the ground and really getting that interest. But thankfully, we have really passionate first year that is going to take the club somewhere awesome.
So are you transitioning your leadership role to Anna? So what's going on there?
Yes, I am taking over the role of the president of Voice for our chapter. Starting this semester, I've been taking over some of the duties and planning some of the events and stuff like that. And Daniela is moving on to her clinical year.
Yes, I just send things to Anna and then they're Anna's problem. No, but yeah, no, I'm just trying to connect her to the important people. And it's hard because, again, COVID. So her experience as a first year is very different than everyone else's. And things go back to normal, which hopefully will be sometime soon. But she's been doing great. And from what I can see, she's going to be a really good president.
So as we come outside of the pandemic, you know, we're thinking about ways that our membership could potentially participate or be of help to you. What would that look like? Do you guys need supplies? Do you need volunteers, money? Like how can the OVMA help?
Obviously, financial support is always appreciated in vet school. And I think that everyone always pushes for diversity and inclusion in veterinary school. And I think that some of the difficulties around that is that, you know, how do you promote having students of color understanding that because of privilege and oppression in the United States, that they're more likely to end up in significantly more debt than students that do not identify as students of color. And so I'm always pro scholarships, but also, so unfortunately, sometimes some students need a little bit of not bribery, but leverage to come to diversity events. So it's always appreciated, whether the sponsorship be through food or financial sponsorship directly, where we can kind of offer incentive for students to come and listen to these important talks and for us to be able to really do these more unique opportunities. So we were very grateful that SAVMA was able to support us for our student parent initiatives. And I, like, for COVID, was in the belief that I'm not going to spend any of that money because I want the club to have that money for when they can do stuff in person. And I think that, I guess when you say volunteers, it hadn't occurred to me, but I think that would be really awesome if we did do events where mentors would volunteer to be there and to begin to develop that kind of network and relationship where it's not, the purpose isn't for that, but that's like a secondary outcome. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I definitely think the mentorship and having opportunities would be great. I mean, we're going to be graduating, well, for some of us sooner rather than later, but for me, I'm going to be graduating in 3 or 4 years. And when I graduate, I won't be a student anymore. I'll be joining the community. So I think just making sure that that community is safe and is good for us and is prepared to take on these challenges and not just the students involved would be really helpful. It's not just the students that need to be educated and need to make progress and make changes. We also need the support of veterinarians and other more experienced people who are more familiar with the system and can help us navigate this.
So having conversations like that has to be a bit challenging. So what has been your experience as it leads to being women of color, finding yourselves in an environment that is predominantly white? And I'm sure there's some cultural differences, even just colloquialisms that sometimes you might have to find yourself suppressing or making excuses for. So how do you both navigate those spaces?
So I think that can certainly be a challenge. I, of course, have 3 years of veterinary school, but I also have 2 years or a year and a half of a master's program. So I have been in the professional educational setting for some time.
And I think that it's one, a challenge with regards to what role you want to play. And so when you hear things that are either overtly or subconsciously very inappropriate, kind of deciding, you know, do I, as the representative of Latinx people in this situation, speak out, you know, and comment on, hey, that was massively inappropriate, but then kind of the emotional labor that comes with that. And that's not my job to teach you how to be a decent human being. And so I think in part that is really challenging to try and figure out, you know, do I take this opportunity to educate this person so the next person doesn't have to feel what I'm feeling right now? Or do I just take a step back because it's not my responsibility? And I really am just tired of having these moments. And then when you do communicate them, it can be a different challenge because it's very instinctual to feel attacked, you know, oh, well, I'm not racist. Okay, well, you might be and it's not okay, but it's good to acknowledge that, right? And it can be a challenge if you are of a group that has those stereotypes surrounding being, let's say, abrasive or angry or fiery, and you're trying not to fit that stereotype, but that is your culture's communication style. And so I am a Latinx individual. And so there are those stereotypes surrounding, you know, fiery Spanish women. And, you know, that's challenging because I am at Ohio, which is a Midwest state, and it can be challenging to navigate Midwest niceness, which sometimes can feel like ignoring the elephant in the room because it'll make people feel uncomfortable. And I think that we have to become comfortable with feeling uncomfortable because people of color have been doing it forever and LGBTQ plus people have been doing it forever. So you'll be fine. You will survive it. And I think that it's, you know, focusing on what is being said to you as opposed to how it's being said to you. You know, I'm never going to be disrespectful to anyone, but I'm not going to spend the time being like, oh my God, you're such a good person. But also, that was really bigoted. Like, no, that was really bigoted. And I'm not going to waste my time making you feel better about it. And I think that it can be really challenging if you are in that culture of people who feel like you should first be like, oh my God, but you're such a good person. But I think that can definitely be a challenge and something that individuals who want to be allies need to consider. Like, am I more focused on how that person said that to me versus what I did wrong and that it's being like this person felt comfortable enough to approach that to me?
Yeah, I am a transracial South Korean adoptee. So I was raised in a white family, but I am Korean myself. And so I have sort of always been surrounded by whiteness as a product of how I was raised. And at all of my works, the two works that I've been at, I've never had an Asian coworker. And I think that has been impactful for me because I've never had a role model in my chosen field. And I've heard from other students and some of my mentors and stuff like that, that they've heard things like, you only got into vet school because you are X, Y, or Z. And so there's this pressure on us as marginalized students that we don't have as much to give except for our chosen identity, like that becomes who we are. And I think that's also really difficult for us to deal with. In regards to what Daniela was saying with how people receive feedback about something that they've said or done, I think it's important to acknowledge that when we say things like, I didn't mean it that way, or that's not who I am, it takes away from the focus of the actual issue and instead turns it into your feelings. And so the person who brought this issue up to you not only has to deal with trying to correct it, but also has to manage your own guilt. And that emotional labor is another increased thing that puts pressure on us. And that also helps keep us silent. Because if we are uncomfortable with dealing with both our feelings and yours, then we are less likely to speak up about it.
Absolutely. I found that the people that I have encountered that are allies do far more listening than making me feel responsible for their guilt or disappointment by the statement. And so I think that's going to be one of the key things moving forward is that people really need to understand it's okay if you don't know, but just be quiet and listen. And I feel like that's a huge piece of the conversation. Given those things, why is being a part of Voice important to your student experience?
There were a lot of things going on within probably the first couple of weeks of the semester starting. And I felt they were not really being talked about in our school forums. And there were a lot of serious issues that were sort of being dismissed and treated as inconveniences. The way people were talking about it did not really feel like they were considering the impact on people's lives except for their own. And so I reached out to Daniela because I wanted to know what I could do to get involved, to change that so that we could be more compassionate towards our fellow human being in the way that we are compassionate towards animals.
That's so interesting for me to hear because as I think about the reputation that the College of Vet Med has nationwide for its diversity initiatives, I know there's always room for improvement. So, you know, how do you address those gaps with the leadership at the college?
OSU is leading the way in diversity. It's one of the biggest institutions that is prioritizing that. And I am extremely grateful to Dean Moore for making it a priority and for pushing these views and values. I think one of the most important things that having these communities offers is just a place to be real, where you can just be honest about how you feel. Again, kind of what we were talking about before, without needing to worry about the feelings of others, right? And so when Anna reached out to me, giving her a space to say like, hey, I've been hearing these things and, you know, is that normal? What do I do with this? And for me to be able to be honest with her and say, oh yeah, it is. And to validate those feelings for her that, no, it's not just you, trust me, sis. It's all of us. And so I think one of the big things that I felt the value of voice is that, one, it's a presence, right? And so not every school has voice. And then second is to just be someone that first years or new students or someone that is maybe not comfortable having these conversations with others. They know like, well, I can reach out to voice and have these conversations. You know, we have had these like safe space discussions surrounding things going on, like the protests that happened over the summer and surrounding things that happened in the vet school that were not appropriate. And it was a student that anonymously said something they should not have said. And thankfully, the school, you know, took it as a big deal because the statement was basically kind of along the lines of what Anna was talking about with, oh, like you only got in because of diversity and diversity shouldn't be as important as like clinical experience. Thankfully, the school came to the forefront saying like, we don't agree with this. Diversity has a lot of value. And as scientists, we should know that given that species that produce by themselves die out very quickly. And when you bring in new genes, you get better species. But just really focusing on that, we have a commitment to diversity and you pick the wrong school if that's not important to you. And so I am incredibly grateful to OSU. But again, yeah, there is a lot of work to be done. And it's hard because all the work you do, you will never see the fruit of your labors. Someone else 10 years down the line will. But I think that the presence and the ability to, as a diversity club, do kind of like whatever we want within reason is really important. Just the existence of an organization, that's step one, you know? And unfortunately, we are in a dominantly white profession. And even in the most diverse school, you are the biggest small percentage, right? And so it's a lot of unpacking to be done there. And you know, some faculty are really promoting it and understand the importance. But like I sat on an interview for vet school where I talked about the difficulties I had in my master's program and being at that professional level and not having anyone that looked like me or had those experiences that I had. You know, all my mentors were like white identifying, and the interviewer was like, well, why does that matter? First of all, it was a school that was talking all about how diversity was so important. And I was like, okay. You know, it's one of those life-changing moments where you're like, well, do I say something or do I just like smile and nod my head? I told her, well, it's because I had to navigate a lot of things that I really shouldn't have had to navigate and I wouldn't have had to navigate if I had that kind of support, which I didn't. And if those, you know, mentors had to have someone they were accountable to. And so saying those things in front of someone else who identifies as a person of color and has a kind of power. And thankfully, the other interviewer knew that this interview took a poor turn and they diverted the conversation away from that. But it's just like at all levels, you're having these moments. And if we don't even have clubs, if we don't even have a diversity person at your school, you're very, very behind the curve. And it's going to be a very long, arduous process for your students and your school.
I understand that Voice does have a national platform and a national conference. Can you tell me a little bit about the conference this past January, like the content, what you got out of it?
Diversity and inclusion related conferences are super valuable and super important, and I will never deny that. But at times it can be challenging because it's like the people in the room aren't the people in the room that should be in the room, if you know what I mean. And so like, yeah, I know the value of diversity and inclusion. I have been pushing for it for many, many years. So this is valuable to me, but to a point, the people that really should be in this room that really need to learn these lessons are not here. But this year was really cool. I really valued the ones that they had surrounding mental health. One, because I find that at least in our community, in the Latinx community, mental health is something that's really not talked about and really not promoted and really just has a negative skew with regards to like, oh, they're crazy or they're XYZ. And so having that, I guess, permission to feel things and go to therapy and a counselor and having those conversations in our communities was what I really got out of the Voice Conference. And there were some really awesome speakers that, you know, talked about their own struggles and that resonated with me and the struggles that I have had and knowing that, oh, you know, this person is where I want to be and they struggled the way I did and like, I will be okay.
At the Voice National Conference, one of the things that I thought was really powerful was in the comments, actually, during the speakers, that people would be asking questions like saying, like, I'm marginalized and I had this experience and I wasn't sure how to deal with it. How can I deal with this moving forward? And I remember Dr. Lisa Greenhill, who works for the AAVMC, she was leaving really good advice about how she as a person would approach this and things that she's heard that's been effective and not. And I think that's really nice because, you know, there's not really a class on how to deal with racism and stuff like that. When you approach these things as a marginalized person, you're already sorted out as different, even though it's not recognized all the time. Like, you could fit in sometimes, but then when it comes down to these issues, people go, oh yes, I forgot that you were Asian. So hearing her advice and knowing that there are more tools available and people that I can reach out to, that was also really great.
What is the best way for people to reach out to the student chapter of Voice?
If you're interested in being involved with diversity inclusion on campus or with Voice, please reach out to us or any of the other affinity groups. We are definitely really interested in having members of the community be more engaged. So our Facebook page for the Ohio chapter is OSU CBM Voice. Basically, like, the only rules really is that as long as you're related to the veterinary community, you can be on there and you can like post whatever you want as long as it's appropriate. And people can message the page via Facebook, or they can also reach out to our email, which is oscuvmvoice@gmail.com. And that would honestly be the best way. That's how most people reach out to us. They say, like, we have this opportunity or we have these whatevers that we would like to offer. You know, do you need that from us? How can we help? And we'll go from there.
So ladies, I'm going to end with this question. What excites you as you think about life post-graduation in the field?
I'm really excited to, like, be a real adult, I guess, and kind of the world is your oyster type of stuff. I'm excited to see all the different options vet med has to offer and what I choose, and to play with cool zoo animals, ideally all over the world.
So are you going back to New York?
No, I love New York. Don't let me lie to you, but I'm going to go wherever the best opportunity is. I don't really care where that is. And like, I love my family, but they're needy.
Noted. Anna?
I'm a first year, so I still have a lot to sort out through my career. But I think I'm really interested in being a mentor, not just in terms of, you know, like diversity and inclusion and stuff like that, but just in general, teaching the next generation of veterinarians all different kinds of things that people showed me, all these different cases, and saying, this is how you know it's this, and this is how you deal with that. I think that'll be really fun. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Fantastic. Well, I commend you both for being leaders in this space. There were pathways that were laid before you, and you guys are kind of just picking up the torch and taking it further for those coming behind you. So I certainly commend you for that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies, both for joining us today. I appreciate your time and certainly the conversation. So I'm looking forward to putting this out in front of everybody.
Thank you. And bye.
That does it for today's episode. If you enjoyed today's show, please be sure to tune in 2 weeks for the next episode.
Please visit us at fullyvettedpodcast.com for show notes and to provide listener feedback. As always, until next time, stay safe and be well.
The Ohio Veterinary Medical Association is always seeking ways to enrich your member experience. To access resources mentioned in this episode, share your feedback and suggestions, and send us an email or voice message, please visit www.fullyvettedpodcast.com. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you prefer to listen, so you never miss an episode. I'm Kristen Bennett, and on behalf of the OVMA, thanks for listening to Fully Vetted. We'll see you next time.